Now, we are in the midst of trying to make sense out of zodiacal nonsense. That's a nice word, nonsense. I noticed some of them have had to slip out. It's okay, Joe, let them come in while I'm teaching because I want to use every minute of this hour. If you just tuned in, this is the fourth hour on this subject. I'm giving a book away Sunday at King's House 1 to those that come. The Glory of the Stars by E. Raymond Capt. You want a fuller study, you need to get Joseph Seiss, The Gospel and the Stars, or E.W. Bullinger on the same subject. These star signs have these strange creatures and symbols that are man's attempt to picture truths that God has behind these symbols. I told the first night I taught on it an example used by Joseph Seiss, who visited a very famous Christian cathedral in Istanbul that dated back to the time of Constantine. It had since become a Muslim mosque. There was a very famous representation of Christ that they had painted over because they didn't want the Christian message in that what was now a Muslim mosque. But you could still see it. No matter how much they had distorted it and painted it over, you could still see the truth that was there. That's what astrology and mythology has done to the message that Paul in Romans 2 says was revealed from the heavens of God's wrath against ungodliness from the beginning. These signs, taking different shapes, have a common germ that goes to the remotest antiquity. That common germ is, in the most ancient of zodiacs, you break it between Virgo and Leo, that circle of the constellation. You don't break it at Aries. You break it right here between Virgo and Leo. And you start your day, or you start your year here. You don't start it over here with Aries. Now, the astrologists start with Aries. The mystery of the Sphinx is that the Sphinx contains the clue to God's message in the stars, as well as God's message in the pyramid. Start with Virgo, and as you simplify the signs, the truth of Virgo is a helpless but pure woman becomes the basis for God kenning himself to mortal flesh, the incarnation, where God moves into a tent of human flesh, that the substance of God might move onto the scene of this earth, there to begin the task of redeeming fallen man. He comes forth as, in the supporting decan, the child on the mother's knee. Heathen have reversed it and worshipped the mother as the queen of heaven. She was helpless. Couldn't even get up until the sun enables her to raise up. It's the child coma that's the desire of the ages, not the mother. She was but the helpless instrument in whom the righteous seed was placed. This desired one, the infant, becomes the two-natured being, God, Son of God, Son of Man. That's the meaning of the centaur. Though he looks strange, that two-natured being in all mythology, like the Virgin, is good. There are many evil beings in mythology. The centaur was the good one, the teacher, the healer, who came to help man who rejected him, who dies of an arrow not intended for himself, who didn't have to die but was immortal but voluntarily let himself die that another might live, and is then elevated to the stars. He is Boötes, the shepherd who guards his sheep. That's the intro. That's the first chapter. Virgo. I'll quit reading and just talk to you. That's the first chapter. Second chapter. Immediately, if you're going to redeem man, you've got to confront righteousness. God will not change. And to gain access to God, you must be right by His standards. The Old Testament taught that story by having God enclosed in a tent. And you couldn't get to Him, except you went to that place, and between you and where God was a white linen fence 7.5 feet high. And all you could see on the outside was the barrier of that fence, telling you God's righteousness in contrast to our inadequacy, and running from post-op to the outside, and attached was a brass chain attached to brass pegs, and brass is always the symbol of judgment. When sin is atoned for, it's put on the altar of brass. It's always the sign of judgment. And all that confronted man was the symbol of judgment if he remained outside. And the whiteness of God's holiness, symbolized by the fence, to wall him away. There was only one door you could go through. And in the symbol of the tabernacle, the very colors of the door spoke of the one door that lets you in. That's why you have four Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. The colors of the door were blue, white, purple, and scarlet. Blue for His eternal nature, that's spoken of by John. White for the perfect man, which is the subject of Luke's Gospel. Purple, the symbol of the kingship of Christ, which is the subject of Matthew. And scarlet, the suffering servant, which is the message of Mark. God speaks in symbols. Now, the one born of the woman, the righteous seed, who is the desire of the nations, the two-natured being, who becomes the shepherd of his sheep to protect them, has to confront in the journey through God's message the scales of righteousness. The only way the scales can be brought up and not dump on the lower side, not dump off into the scorpion's grasp, is to face the cross, the decan of the southern cross that's under the centaur. Pay the price that purchaseth. And when he does that, having confronted the full price, he obtains the crown, which is on the other side of the celestial equator. That Coronia Borealis, which is everybody's usually aware of that one because it looks more like what its symbols picture than anything else, the symbol of the crown. Having obtained the crown at the cross, meeting the scales of justice, having obtained the price of redemption, the battle's not over. Now the warfare is engaged. The dragon. The oldest prophecy of Genesis says, the seed of the woman will bruise the serpent, and the heel of the seed of the woman will be bruised by the serpent. He confronts the scorpion, the third chapter. The scales being the second, with the supporting decans of the scales, he now confronts the third chapter, the scorpion. The supporting pictures in that symbol, the man wrestling with the serpent whose head is reaching for the crown. One of the feet of the man is stung by the scorpion's tail. The other foot's on the heart of the scorpion. Then we move on to Sagittarius, where we were. I handle it so fast. At the end, I hate these sections we do for satellite. I like to have 3 hours without a break. You know, I'm working on it, but I'm just about to get a station that'll give me 3 hours without a break in Los Angeles. It's going to cost some money. but I'm just about to get it. Sagittarius elevates that two-natured being to a warlike role with his bow and an arrow pointed at the heart of the scorpion. Associated with Sagittarius or the centaur, the Decans, an eagle with a harp, pouncing for the kill and bringing the joy that the harp displays. An altar that dumps downward the most ancient of Egyptian zodiacs, a man on a throne beating the jackal as a symbol of the devil into hell. Conflict is built into these signs, and the conflict never changes. It is always between the righteous seed in his various forms symbolized and that serpent, which is the real warfare. 1,000 times I've said we're at spiritual warfare. We are the foot soldiers on the earth that are participating in a much larger battle between the one that will ultimately be King of Kings and that old serpent, which is the devil. The third decan streams across the heavens, the dragon. Then we come to Capricorn, the sea goat. Now, I want you to get these general ideas fixed in your mind, because we're going to come to one of the purest pictures of Christ the Savior in the stars. And wouldn't you know it, that that's the one that Satan has exploited to twist more than any other. Wherever the profound truth is that God is communicating, the great enemy of mankind and primary enemy of God will be there to twist it out of shape. But the message is still there to those who look. The message starts with Virgo. Each of the 12 constellations, and as you've seen me teach year after year, I keep coming at it so many different ways that all of a sudden it grabs you and the central truth begins to gestalt. You get a feel for it. The truth starts with a virgin, bearer of the righteous seed, God's redeeming one, the righteous branch, bearer of the righteous branch. The supporting constellations, the decans, the infant child that is the desire of the nations. The centaur, the two-natured being. The shepherd, Bootes, that means the coming one who will be the shepherd of his sheep and protect them. Chapter 1's sail by. Immediately he confronts the scales. And one of the things I like about Cap's book is he's got early on in the book a simple page. All you got to do is memorize this page and you got the gist of it, these two pages. He just lays it down simply. Sign Virgo, calm of the infant, the branch, the desired one. The minor constellations that go with Virgo. Comb of the infant, Centaurus, a centaur, with a dart piercing a victim. Bootes, the great shepherd and harvester. Second sign, Libra, the scales, really means weighed. To confront the scales of justice, he has to go to the cross and pay the price, over which Centaurus, in another constellation, is advancing. The victim, slain, pierced to death, is a supporting. Again, the subtle truth that the victim is not a victim by someone else's hand, but the shepherd lays his life down, and that symbolized it is the very two-natured one himself, his dart. pierces the victim. He obtains the crown. Borealis. Having confronted the scales of righteousness, paid the price on the cross, become the victim, he gets the crown. Snatches it from the serpent's grasp. Immediately, the pattern unfolds. He confronts the scorpion. The supporting constellations tell of the struggle. The man, Ophiuchus, the serpent holder, who is struggling and keeping the serpent's head from grabbing the crown, whose one foot has been stung with a scorpion, the other foot on the heart of the scorpion. Hercules then appears as a supporting Decan to show the further role of this desired one, this shepherd, this harvester, this two-natured one, this centaur. He is now seen as Hercules, wounded in one heel. You've heard how many times as that symbol moves into Grecian mythology, Achilles wounded in the heel, twisted by heathen thought into strange and different meanings, but all going back to the root of Hercules, the type of Christ himself, the mighty man, wounded in one heel, the other foot over the dragon's head. In one hand he holds the golden apples from the tree of life, and the three-headed dog of hell in the other with an uplifted club. God wrote it all down years ago. Then Sagittarius is where we were. It focuses in on that two-natured one, the centaur with the arrow and the bow drawn and the arrow aimed for the heart of the dragon. Supporting constellations, really the eagle holding the heart, who pounces to destroy and brings the joy of deliverance, symbolized by the harp. Called an altar, the second symbol is really consuming fire burning downward. The ancient Egyptians had the best symbol for it. A man on a throne beating the jackal, another symbol of Satan, into the fires of hell. And since Sagittarius is there to bring victory, he confronts Draco the dragon, the old serpent, winding himself about the pole in kinks and contortions across the northern sky. Move to the fifth chapter. You come to Capricornus. I'm going to go out of this one and read from Sace so you'll get a feel for what these various ones have to say on the subject. He names the various ones very well, I think. He names the sign of Libra, the suffering redeemer, who moves to become the toiling deliverer. And then in Sagittarius, the triumphant warrior. But now we come to the sign of Capricorn. John 12 is his text for that chapter, where Jesus said, "Except a corn of wheat fall into the ground and die, it abideth alone." Perhaps this is as good a place as any to offer the remark, he says, that the fact that these 12 signs of the zodiac divide themselves into three distinct groups, each group having its own distinct subject. The first group, consisting of four signs already before us, relate to the person, work, and triumph of the illustrious Redeemer, with special reference to himself. Born of the Virgin, confronting the scales, conquering the scorpion, and in Sagittarius coming to pierce the scorpion with his arrow and win the victory. The first four signs of the 12 reveal the person, the righteous seed, the work, confronting the scales of justice, the triumph as he struggles and wins in conflict with the dragon, of the Redeemer with special reference to Him. 12 signs, 4 of them, 3 the symbol of divine revelation, 4 of them reveal the nature, the person, the work, the triumph of the Redeemer. The next group, 4 more, consists of Capricornus, Aquarius, Pisces, and Aries, with their several decans. These 4 relate to the fruits of His work and His mediatorship, the formation, condition, and destiny of His people, the church, or that body of people spiritually born to Him through faith and made partakers of the benefits of His redemptive administration. The first 4, with their decans, focus on the Redeemer, His struggle, His work, His triumph against the scorpion. The next 4, beginning with Capricorn, will focus on the fruits of His work, the benefits, the condition, and the destiny of that body of people that He rescues in His redeeming work. While the third and last group relate to the final consummation of the whole and the united glory of the Redeemer. We get into prophecy there. And the redeemed and the exalted condition of things which the consummation is to realize. Now let's start. We've just finished the 4. Virgo, Libra, Scorpio, Sagittarius. The Redeemer is the righteous seed, the two-natured one, and on, I don't want to review it again, who confronts the serpent, who comes as the two-natured one in victory, who like an eagle brings the joy of victory, who wrestles with the serpent and keeps him from getting the crown, who treads on the scorpion and puts him down, who becomes the victim to obtain the crown. All of those thoughts are the work of the Redeemer and the struggle to break us free from that hold which Satan had on mankind. God's wrath against ungodliness. Now we come to what He accomplishes, the fruits, and how He does it. Here we have the picture of a fallen goat, Capricorn. Smaller picture. I can give it to you in Cap's book, the one we'll be giving you on Sunday. The pictures are a little easier to pick up on the camera with a black background. It's the fallen goat with the fishtail. Now, you're going to see that these symbols combined, that fishtail and that horned animal, more than any other symbol, Satan sought to distort. He reaches into these symbols and twisted them into a hated distortion. You're going to understand, I think, why God expresses such hatred in the Old Testament against idolatry that twisted His truth. And as Paul says, they begin to worship the creature instead of the Creator. Wherefore God turned them over to abominable things. Well, the answer to that is, go behind the lie to the truth. You're going to see that this entrance into the work of Christ and the benefits of His work is going to highlight the most precious thing that Christ did, and that is the thing distorted by the heathen more than anything else. Fallen goat with the vigorous tail of a fish. Half goat, half fish. Now it may seem singular and far-fetched, Seiss says, to connect the text. This is Joseph Seiss, The Gospel and the Stars. To connect the text with such an abominable figure at first glance. That of the text really, however, is the image which we had in Virgo, where the illustrious son of the Virgin is likened in that case to a grain or corn of seed denoted with a spike of the ear of wheat. It was necessary for this seed or grain of wheat to fall into the ground and die in order to reach its intended fruitfulness. The meaning of the passage is that Christ was to die as a sacrifice, and that by virtue of His sacrificial death, salvation was to come to man and the congregation of saved ones formed. as Wordsworth expressed it, he compares himself to a grain of corn, which would be buried by the unbelief of the Jews, but would fructify in the faith of the Gentiles, as much as to say, I will die that they may live. My death will be their birth. As the phoenix was said to arise out of the ashes of its consumed predecessor, so the church or congregation of saints rises out of the death of Christ sacrificed for the sins of the world. This is everywhere the teaching of the Scriptures. Nowhere more pointed and graphic than that text in John 12 where Jesus said of himself, except the corn of wheat fall on the ground and die, it abideth alone. Now we translate this idea, and when we do it, into the imagery of the fifth sign of the zodiac, a graphic and much older picture of the same thing is intended. First of all, we have the figure of a goat, always the sacrificial animal, always the symbol of sinning man. God commanded the children of Israel, take ye a kid of the goats for a sin offering, in Leviticus 9. So Aaron took the goat, which was the sin offering for the people, and slew it and offered it for sin. And of the goat of the sin offering, Moses said, it is most holy, and God hath given it you to bear the iniquity of the congregation to make atonement for them before the Lord. On the great day of atonement, two goats were picked. They cast lots over them. Again, that constant pattern in the Old Testament of many different images for the same person. They would cast lots over two goats. One they would sacrifice and slay as the sin offering, death resulting in the pouring out of life's blood. But the other goat would stay alive, and they'd confess the sins over it. The high priest would give it to a responsible man that was to lead it to the wilderness where no inhabited person was, typical of the way God takes the sins and puts them where nobody can ever bring them up again. A scapegoat. Always a goat as the sin bearer. In the next place, this goat in the zodiac, it's not only a goat that's pictured, but the goat is fallen down in the attitude of dying. His one leg is doubled under his body. His one leg is doubled under his body. Keep the picture. His one leg is doubled up under his body, and the other is powerless to lift him up. His head is drooping and sinking in death. Always in the ancient charts. And the celestial equator slices right through his face. This is the identical falling and dying of Christ as the sin offering to which he refers in the text. It is the same seed of the woman in the attitude and condition of a sacrifice for sin, because now the subject is the benefits he obtains. Christ surely was wounded. You know, I don't need to tell you the text on him being wounded for our transgressions. As the head of the flock, he suffered in their stead. And here it is written on the stars from the earliest ages, and with a vividness of pictorial representation. The names in this sign also point to the same thought and significance. Jedi and Dabi are the most prominent stars in this constellation. In Hebrew, Arabic, and Syriac, these names mean the cut off, the hewn down, and the sacrifice slain. Other stars in the same constellation have names of similar import, signifying the slaying or the record of the cutting off. But it is the same time a picture of something else, developed out of and joined with the dying sacrificial goat. The body of the fallen and dying goat terminates in the body and tail of a vigorous fish. The tail of the fish coiled and active. The living fish thus takes its being out of the dying goat.
This is the end of Side 1. For the rest of the message, please turn the tape over for Side 2. Thank you.